Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Okay, here we go. We are live on YouTube to talk about another very weird Republican debate. Very weird. And I have the perfect people to do it with. They also happen to be the new hosts of a new MSNBC show called The Weekend, premiering on weekend mornings in January. So with me at the table here in Washington, former RNC chairman Michael Steele.
Hi.
And former chief communications director to Vice President Kamala Harris, Simone Sanders Townsend. MSNBC anchor Alicia Menendez is joining us from New York. She was anchoring 2 hours already today. So thank you for still being with us. And we couldn't do a YouTube show without our resident YouTube star, of course. Brian Tyler Cohen is here, and he'll be gathering your questions for us throughout the night. You can send them in the chat. We'll be answering them. Ask us anything. I may regret saying that, but I probably won't. So we're going to take you to the spin room. We've got some special guests stopping by. We've got snacks.
Yes.
We've got snacks,
lots
everyone.
Lots of snacks.
Alicia, if you didn't get snacks, we will make it up to you. We have caffeine. If you chose not to watch tonight's debate, we'd all totally get it. So we watched it for you. And we're going to get you caught up very quickly. Four candidates, not named Donald Trump, took to the stage tonight in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And what may have been, and there's a lot of competition, but it may have been the most off the rails debate yet.
The only person more fascist than the Biden regime now is Nikki Haley. You can put lipstick on a Dick Cheney. It is still a fascist neocon.
This is the fourth debate that you would be voted in the first 20 minutes as the most obnoxious blowhard in America. So shut up for a little while.
Do everybody a favor. Just walk yourself off that stage. Enjoy a nice meal.
Yeah.
And get the hell out of this place.
Is he fit?
Like,
you have your thing.
Is he fit or isn't he?
No, I don't have my thing.
We don't.
He's the thing. Is
we
he
do
fit
not
or isn't
want
he?
To do someone
You're talking
that's
about him being 80 years old.
It doesn't mean
Ron,
that somebody
is he
couldn't
fit?
Get elected. That's
Ron,
up to the people to
Governor DeSantis, let him.
All right, guys.
That was special. That was so special.
All right, Michael Steele.
Have you ever seen Love and Hip Hop?
I know.
You're the Cardi B moment where Cardi B is like, what was the reason?
I saw that on Twitter tonight.
Yes,
maybe it was you.
It was
using
me.
That on Twitter tonight. All right, so Simone, we saw some key moments there, I suppose. Key moments, crazy moments. I don't even know.
Crazy.
Well, give us what was your takeaway watching the whole debate?
Well, I watched the last debate as well, like we all did. I thought the last debate, and I hate to say this, but it was a little boring. It was a little muted.
The last debate.
This debate was not muted. It was the opposite of the last debate. The last debate, I would argue, was more policy substantive, right? This debate, we're talking about not even the core things of Donald Trump. So I thought that Nikki Haley, out of all the people on the stage, look like the adult on the stage, if you will. I still have yet to see a president. It was concerning. People sounded angry. You know, it sounded, they were yelling, they were screaming. I was shocked that abortion didn't come up. I'm more shocked that abortion didn't come up and healthcare didn't come up, but yet Vivek Ramaswamy found time to bring up climate change again.
And anti-trans, more anti-trans than anti-Trump. Okay, Michael Steele, give us your take.
I come at it a little
back.
Bit.
Don't hold back today.
No.
We're on YouTube.
Hold back?
I'm joking.
No, I'm going to differ a little bit from my friend, Simone. Nikki Haley was muted. In my view, this evening.
Do you think that was purposeful? Because I kind of think maybe.
I think a little bit, yes. In the political parlance, it was, you got the lead, hold it. Don't do anything or say anything that gives away your lead or your opportunity. The problem is, you still have to do something. And there were moments where she tried, but it's one of those things when you're playing catch up in that space when the incoming is coming and you're just sort of standing there and not really engaging, it becomes a little bit of a problem. So I give the evening to Chris Christie for two reasons. One, he was the only one who made it very clear that the guy they needed to beat was Donald Trump. He is 40 points ahead of all of them. And so, as he noted, we're going after each other, and he's the one who's winning. So I thought that was important. And two, I think there was a little bit more gravitas from him on some of the issues that they did discuss, where he sort of admitted where, you know, in the past his position may have been one thing, and he sort of talked about how he kind of grew in that moment. So I would give him the advantage on this debate tonight.
Well, I guess it depends on whether Republican primary voters relate
to that. But that's not the point
he
here.
Said.
You you're way past that. You're way past
performance on the debate
stage.
Yeah,
performance on the debate stage. He's not picking up voters tonight.
Yes.
He's not going from 3 to 8. Tomorrow.
But he's going for history, I think.
He had some
good moments, and we'll talk about those. Okay, Alicia, hello in New York. Tell us what you thought. What was your takeaway from that crazy toad ride?
I will not be sharing my analysis until snacks and caffeine are provided. I was given this.
Well, I know. If you were here, we would have delivered what you'd requested, or what I thought you might like, maybe is more what it is.
I mean, the best part of the entire debate was texting with Simone. Outside of that, it felt like I was watching the darkest, saddest games of Mad Libs ever. Fauci, Soros, woke industrial complex, fentanyl, all the talk about trans kids. Really no focus on any of the issues that matter and are going to drive voters to the polls, at least when you're talking about a general election. I mean, I think we all know these ideas aren't coming from nowhere. They're clearly showing up in focus groups. Perhaps they're showing up in polling. But what it means is that they're spending time on this stage, not talking about the stakes at all, not talking about the alternative reality where Donald Trump is to win the nomination. They're not even talking about just the issues that are top of mind for voters, like the economy, like housing affordability. There was, you know, some weird riff from DeSantis about drilling for oil as a way of somehow bringing down the price of gas prices. Simone said it. There was no talk about abortion. It's stunning to me. And granted, I did take several breaks, so you'll forgive me if I missed it. But I mean, there was another mass shooting in this country today.
You didn't miss it.
I didn't miss it. There was another mass shooting in this country today, and there was no talk about guns and gun culture. So it felt just completely disconnected from the reality of the moment. And to Michael's point, yeah, this may not be about picking up any voters, but you know, this is the alternate slate of candidates we could be looking at in some weird world where it's not Donald Trump. And you don't get the sense substantively that you're seeing anything that meets the moment.
Yeah, there are moments in these debates, I totally agree, where it feels, do you guys know what Second Life, do you remember what Second Life is? It's like that alternative universe online. And there were moments in this debate, but others, where I felt like Ron DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy were like ChatGPT candidates, where they were like spitting out words that didn't necessarily make sense together. And the differentiator for me was in part that whether you like Chris Christie or not, or Nikki Haley or not, they spoke like actual human beings.
Yeah.
And the other two were kind of like, they had like a Mad Libs of words they were supposed to say over and over again.
They were the most desperate. I mean, when you think about, you know, Christie and Haley, Christie long ago disabused himself of the notion of actually being the nominee for obvious reasons. The base gives him a negative 56% approval plus. But for Vivek and for DeSantis, they were in play. You know, they were the guys who were bringing the juice, and especially DeSantis. So now when you're DeSantis and you're dropping to fourth and fifth place in a four-man race.
Yeah.
Not fifth in a four-man race. I can count.
Fourth in a four-man race is still not good.
No, you're fifth,
but Doug
he's
Burgum,
fifth in a four-person race.
You know, may not be on the stage. You know, there was this crazy... So Vivek, so if you guys can pull up number 11, where Vivek, and just to go to Alicia's point, sometimes we forget the crazy things that are said at these debates, and it's kind of like they just get washed through the moment. But Vivek talked about January 6th as an inside job. I mean, one of our producers was making the point, like, yeah, it was, because Trump was running the White House. Okay, so let's play this and we can talk about it.
Why am I the only person on the stage, at least, who can say that January 6th now does look like it was an inside job? That the government lied to us for 20 years about Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11. That the great replacement theory is not some grand right-wing conspiracy theory, but a basic statement of the Democratic Party's platform. That the 2020 election was indeed stolen by big tech.
Like, Nikki used to be Big Tech.
Yes.
I feel gaslit in an alternative reality here. And I one could say.
Bad second life. Yes. Evil second life.
Evil second life. Maybe it was an inside job because, you know, Speaker Mike Johnson, who today said that he was going to blur the faces of people in the video of the January 6th tapes that will be released, he was one of the chief cheerleaders of the insurrection and everything Donald Trump did in the lead up to. He was on the phone with Donald Trump almost every day and then was tweeting about it.
Yeah.
So, in that case, maybe it was an inside job. I just think this is divorced from the reality of everyone else. But, I mean, Mr. Chairman, as you know, there are people in this country that believe what he said, that believe that, like, this really didn't happen in that way. It was Antifa. This was a ploy to get Donald Trump. And that is one of the most concerning parts for me, that some of the craziest things we heard on that debate stage are things that people do believe.
That's such a good point, because when you compare that to the speaker's comment about blurring the faces and the Republican hot rhetoric that it was BLM and Antifa, then why are you blurring the, you're protecting BLM and Antifa? is that what you're doing, Mr. Speaker? We're protecting those guys? No, but this moment was not for rational people who watched them attack the Capitol. It's for those base, for that part of the base that's still stuck in the idea of conspiracy. That litany that Vivek put out there was nothing but conspiracy BS.
No, of course.
And he knew it, and he was selling it because he got owned earlier in the base, in the debate by Chris Christie, not once, but several times. And on the back end, he's trying to figure out how he can reassure himself with that base. The man doesn't have the gravitas for the presidency, but here's the reality. He doesn't have the gravitas with the base for them to move off of Trump to him.
No,
and that's the reality.
They don't entirely maybe take him seriously.
His words. No, he's good entertainment. He's good entertainment. And he's flashy, loud noise.
I mean, I'm going to let you guys think about your thoughts on the Stephen Miller, Taylor Swift controversy, which we'll talk about later. But first, we're going to go to Brian Tyler Cohen, who has some questions from people on YouTube. And we'll just divide them up.
Help me, Brian.
And Elisa, some of these are coming for you, too. Okay, Brian, what do you got?
Well, look, I think it would only be smart right now to ask one question from me, and that is, could everybody here please go ahead and name three provinces in eastern Ukraine?
Oh, my God. Wait, first of all, does someone want to put American boots on the ground in Ukraine on that stage?
I didn't think anybody did.
So I was just like, what is he talking about?
It's a total straw man. First of all, it's a total straw man. But second of all, he came in thinking that this would be some, like, cool gotcha moment for Vivek, and instead it makes him look like he spent 4 minutes on Google prior to the debate looking up some lame gotcha moment. That's
like
it.
on the way he was like, tough Ukraine question, give me one,
hey Siri,
chat GPT, and give me some words. Exactly.
Nobody's sitting there watching that debate. Well, I was going to say, nobody that is sitting there watching that debate thought that prior to Googling that answer, that Vivek was some expert on Eastern Ukrainian provinces.
I also have to say, listening to Ron DeSantis talk about foreign policy and say, it's a red flag when someone says, I know a lot about this issue.
Right.
And you're like, I don't know.
And then
he starts talking, and you're like, things you do not know about include foreign policy.
Right.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
Okay, so we have a question from Faith Adams, and the question is, do you think if all but one candidate dropped out of the race and focused on running against Trump, that that lone person could win the nomination, and who do you think that that person would be?
Oh, this is like fantasy football version of politics.
Yeah,
I kind of love it. Okay, Simone, what do you think?
I just think, no. Look, I think that a lot of people say, oh, if DeSantis gets out, it helps Nikki Haley. But in all of the polling, DeSantis's voters, their second choice is Donald Trump, not Nikki Haley. Now, some would say, I think, Mr. Chairman, maybe you told me, well, it's a competition. You got to give him a chance. But I don't know. I just think that the base is beholden to Donald Trump. That one candidate would have to attack Donald Trump. Where?
I know. It's a tough. Okay, we're going to keep taking them. So, like, you know, Brian, what else you got?
All right. So this is a question for me, and I'm especially interested in this one. But is there a world in which a third party candidate, their presence in this race doesn't redound to Trump's benefit?
Hell no.
Michael wants this one.
Alicia, how about it?
That is my considered political opinion. No. Every number I have seen There is not one poll that's been shown, a legitimate poll, serious poll that's been shown, that's been taken and shown that I've seen, where Donald Trump loses with a third party candidate in the race. And right now, polling is showing that on the Democratic side, that those people on the ballot against Biden are hurting him, you know, potentially in a general election. I mean, yeah. So those votes are leaving the president and going somewhere else. And if they're not going to Kennedy, they're going to Trump. So the reality of it is, this race has to be a race between the two. Anything else other than that will require the Democrats to do something that's on a scale that's twice or three times what they did in 2022.
Meaning turning more people out.
Turning out their vote. Because you've got to overcompensate for the drag that those candidates are going to create in that general election. This is not 1992, where, you know, you had George Bush out there running, and you had, you know, all these other activities that were not as important. And even then, Ross Perot got 17% of the national vote, right, but didn't pull enough to hurt Bush considerably. So the reality for he lost the race, but the reality of it is third party candidates here are devastation to Biden right now. And they've got to figure out how this is going to work going into next year soon.
Can I add one quick point there to just say that if there are a number of candidates that are actually meeting ballot access and getting on the ballot, where they get on the ballot in general election matters. And there is a scenario where a candidate gets enough candidates get on the ballot where no one reaches 270. They yes. get very close. And then in that instance, hello, 12th Amendment, the House picks the president and the Senate picks the vice president.
And Mike Johnson is very empowered. Okay, we can't let Alicia off the hook here because, you know, we got to get more questions. So, Brian, what do you have? What's the next one from somebody watching?
Yes. Yeah, so we have one from Coach Hayes. And the question is, how do Biden
Coach
and Harris
Hayes,
reach
I
out
love
to
that.
Black?
Hello, Coach Hayes.
Yes. How do Biden and Harris reach out to Black and brown men, and should they invest in Southern states? And I'm going to add to that and just and basically, how much do they invest in areas where Democrats don't typically invest, knowing that resources are finite?
This is Simone's area of expertise, so I'm going to kick it back to Simone. But I like that at least now we have questions that are existing here on Planet One.
I would just note they have to invest in some of these other areas. I mean, you think about Reverend Raphael Warnock, yeah. the senator in Georgia, who won his Senate race multiple times by closing the margins in places in rural Georgia where Democrats usually do not do well. It's how Joe Biden won in 2020, closing up the margins in places where Democrats usually don't do well. You cannot go into places in the South and rural areas and get clobbered. It will not work. You will not win as a Democrat. And so they must invest. I think that the ads are great. I spoke to Quentin Folks, who is one of the deputy campaign mm-hmm. managers, and he noted that they're going to start investing in some
who
door knocks.
Warnock's race.
He ran Warnock's race. So he knows a little bit something about closing the gaps.
Yeah.
So he said that they're going to start investing in on the ground organizing. Right now, they've put a record number of money into ads, which is important. Digital ads, on television ads, targeting Black and brown voters. But getting into communities, the barbershops, the beauty shops, and the Bible studies, as I like to say, is going to be very, very important yeah. to close some of those margins. Because Black men and Latino men, they are considered, I think Democrats should be looking at them as independent, persuadable voters.
That they need to bring, and mm-hmm. some of them need to bring back. Okay, we're going to come back to Brian Tyler Cohen. Keep your questions coming. Alicia, we're going to have many coming to you the next round. So be ready. But let's go to the spin room in Tuscaloosa and bring in former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, who's there as a surrogate for the Biden campaign. Well, Senator, how is it feeling there in the spin room? You probably don't have a lot of fans there, but what are you seeing there in the spin room around you?
It's just spinning around and around, and everybody's trying to make the best of a bad situation. That's just all the way it is. I mean, look, I've been asked every time I got stopped over here what I thought about this, about the debate. And I said, it was not a debate. There was no debate, and there was no policy. There was very little of that. It was all name calling. It was all bullying. And they're trying to get their best foot forward here. But the fact is, Jen, I can't see any votes being changed out of what different here tonight. It's the same story, the lack of policy. Hell, they spent 20 minutes on talking about bathrooms. You know, Joe Biden is trying to protect democracy around the world, and they talk about bathrooms. That's just the way this is went tonight.
Yeah, that is so true. I can't even the amount they talked about anti-trans legislation and anti-trans policies, and they were trying to out anti-trans one another was just mind-boggling to me. Have you seen any of the candidates come into the spin room? Has there been a big group supporting one over another?
No, I don't think I've seen a big group. I mean, obviously, you got a horde of media here. And I saw Mr. Ramaswamy here earlier, and there was a big crowd around him. Nikki Haley was giving some remarks up there on the set a few minutes ago. There was a big crowd waiting to talk to her. But that's the only two I've seen here. But it's just, I mean, look, the fact that they've got to come explain themselves, I think, says a lot. About the lack of real policy and the lack of real anything that came out of this today. That's the thing. I don't think anybody should be surprised at what we saw here today. You know, Chris Christie did exactly what he does, and that is attack the president, President Trump. But at the same time, he still got that Trump agenda behind him. It's been what you saw, and this is the irony of all of this, you saw all of these candidates talking about a Trump agenda without calling it a Trump agenda. And they're trying to wrest the nomination from Donald Trump, who was not here. It was just crazy. I mean, it was just something that I think people in America are just the ones that watched are just shaking their heads probably. And I don't think it moved anybody.
Yeah, that's probably true. Senator, have you talked to the Biden campaign? Did they watch it? What did they think of the debate tonight?
Same thing. We were kind of, several of us were watching that together, and it was, you know, you just look at this and you just kind of think, what the hell are they talking about in many of the instances, especially when a lot of it just made no sense, and everybody was trying to one up each other about what they did as a governor or what they did as a business person or what they did as a prosecutor. That's all this was. And the thing that you didn't hear, nobody really addressed, what are they going to do? Are they going to really dismantle Social Security like so many Republicans in the Congress want to do? Are they going to dismantle Medicare? What are they going to do about the Affordable Care Act? What are they really going to do? Do they have a plan to really give health care to the American people? None of that was addressed. They had every opportunity to do that, and they didn't take it. And there's a reason for that, because they have no real policies, Jen. This is all about division. It's about living in the past. It is about the retribution, even though they deny that for themselves. That's all this is about for this party right now, and it's a really sad state of affairs, in my view.
Senator Michael Steele here. So I take to heart everything you just said there, and it's all absolutely true. But the latest polls have Donald Trump over Joe Biden by 4 points, 48 to 44. So despite all of everything you just said, the guy with 91 indictments, whose party can't seem to get themselves out of a bag that's opened at both ends, is beating an incumbent president who has had a sound, solid legislative as well as political agenda. So how do you, or how does the Biden team reconcile their campaign against that fact, that reality at this moment? Because those are your numbers. And you're right, but at the end of the day, you gotta climb out of a 4-point deficit in just this poll, and there are others that show that may be widening. So, particularly with respect to African American men and Hispanic men, Trump's stuff is resonating.
Michael,
so, how do you see that?
Let me tell you, here we're on the campus of the University of Alabama. At the beginning of the football season this year, they wrote this football team off. And now we're in the playoffs for the national championship, okay? Now, I know there's controversy about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if I use that as an example, but okay, we'll go
no,
with
no,
it.
No. Here's the thing. Here's the point of that, Michael. Here's the point. They stuck with their plan. They stuck with their process. They didn't listen to the naysayers. They demonstrated time and time again to people around the country, to people, their fans and others, that they are a talented football team that can get the job done. And regardless of whether you agree with their selection, they got the job done. And that's exactly what Joe Biden has been doing his entire presidency. He has been getting the job done. And as this campaign goes forward and his people have the two choices, which is looks very much like it's going to be Donald Trump and Joe Biden, people are going to start focusing in on that, and they're going to start focusing in on the chaos, as Nikki Haley said, that Donald Trump creates, and they're going to focus on the job that Joe Biden did, pulling us out of COVID, saving democracy around the world, trying to do all of those things, bringing jobs in, the CHIPS Act, you name it, canceling student debt, which is going to help so many people in Alabama and elsewhere. That's how you get this done. You don't panic. You don't look at a poll that's a snapshot of a day, a year out from an election. You wait. And the thing about the polls, Michael, and you know this, the only polls that really count are the elections. And look what Democrats and Joe Biden have done in elections since 2020. They have defied all of the so-called polls leading up. And people voted, and they voted for the policies of this president because he's getting the job done. And that's what I truly believe is going to happen in 2024.
Alicia, I know, has a question for you, Senator. So take it away, Alicia.
Senator, I was struck. Yes, you had Chris Christie sort of prosecuting the case against Donald Trump. You had Vivek with his, you know, Mary Poppins bag of conspiracy theories. But there were there were cracks in the way that Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis were both this time talking about Donald Trump. I'm not sure if you caught that reference. Haley said something like, well, as good as people like to say the Trump economy was, and then she went on to criticize him on the deficit. DeSantis complaining about Trump's age, which I thought was interesting because it would have been a much harder and better hit if he had gone after the question of acuity and the mistakes that we see Donald Trump making out on the trail when he's giving interviews. In the room, did any of that land? How was it when you had DeSantis, when you had Haley making even sort of those marginal exceptions for their general praise for Donald Trump? And how did the Chris Christie prosecution land?
Well, you heard the boos from Chris Christie on a number of occasions. He had to stop at one point to say, you can boo, but I'm the only one up here telling the truth about Donald Trump. And I think, in fact, he was. I don't think that those landed well at all. I don't think they really landed any hard blows against the president. You know, the fact of the matter is that, as Sanders said, that it was, Republicans and Democrats who increased the deficit. But what he didn't say is that we almost had to, in a number of things, to fight COVID. That's what this president has had to do. We had to come out of COVID. We had to increase the deficit a little bit to do that. What they're also not saying about inflation, they love the fact that the stock market is still going and corporate profits are up, but they're not trying to make that connection that corporate profits have a direct connection to the price of goods that people are paying every day in those inflationary prices, whether it's gasoline or whether it's, you know, the price of butter. Those are the things that they just didn't say. So they hit top lines, they hit their talking points, but then there was no real substance behind the talking points.
Senator Jones, so thank you so much for joining us from the spin room, right in the belly's beast there. We really appreciate you. Have a good rest of your evening.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
So everybody's brought up Chris Christie. I would love if you guys could pull up. I thought one of the most interesting moments, I'm not sure it was so impactful, but I want to know what everybody thinks, was when he defended Nikki Haley. So let's pull up number slide number five. And when we have that ready, we'll play it. But what did you think of that?
Well, I was walking into my dinner where I had my red wine down the street. and I was walking in. I was listening. I said, oh,
were you
I
watching
did not
the
have...
debate on your phone?
I was.
From there?
I was.
Okay, good.
I'm unfortunately on the app that they suggested you to watch it on. I'm deleting right after. But I was like, oh, my goodness. I did not have Chris Christie being a defender of women on my bingo card on that debate stage tonight. It was, and I heard you on with Alex earlier, it was the right thing to do. It was a nice thing to do. It's not the competitive thing to do, but it was the right thing to do. I mean, just the personal way in which Vivek Ramaswamy has been attacking Nikki Haley, I think it's just tasteless, and it is not garnering him any support. It's getting very personal.
Yeah, it's like gross. Yeah. Let's play this, and we'll keep talking about Chris Christie, your guy who won the debate.
We're now 25 minutes into this debate, and he has insulted Nikki Haley's basic intelligence, not her positions, her basic intelligence. She doesn't know regions. She wouldn't be able to find something on a map that his three-year-old could find. Look, if you want to disagree on issues, that's fine. And Nikki and I disagree on some issues. But I'll tell you this, I've known her for 12 years, which is longer than he's even started to vote in a Republican primary. And while we disagree about some issues and we disagree about who should be president of the United States, what we don't disagree on is this is a smart, accomplished woman. You should stop insulting her.
Nikki Haley bought Chris Christie a drink tonight.
I'm sure. It was like a bit of like an old school throwback moment to me to politics where we disagree without being disagreeable.
That's the way it used to be. I mean, and the level of personal ad hominem attacks that Vivek is doing is out of the Trump playbook, is sort of that Trump character that he's trying to personify on the stage and show Trump's not here, but I'm in his shoes, right? And Christie basically knocked him out of his shoes and took him down a lot. I mean, and it was very clear how desperate he became as a consequence of that, because he was just trying to find anything to claw back on. Nikki appropriately stood there and said thank you. And nodded her head, because in that moment,
although you said earlier that you thought she was very quiet, and that doesn't
well, she
always
was
work.
Quiet there, but that's a different moment than the rest of the debate. The rest of the, I mean, certainly in the beginning, Nikki was not the Nikki from the last three debates, in my view. She came in and almost immediately grabbed command of the stage. She didn't this time, and I think she didn't for probably advice of some of her team. But that's. That moment stood out on its own because Chris Christie did what a traditional candidate for the office of the presidency would do when, on a stage like that, where someone is being an ass and says, look, okay, that's not why we're here. And you can't go after her or him that way. And so I thought that was a solid moment for both him and Nikki. And again, I'm thinking about it, that's why those two stood out in that space for me. And the other two seemed very much more desperate this time.
In the Survivor version, the alliances were built.
The alliances
tonight.
Were built.
It was very clear.
That's right. That's
so
right.
I know we have. Let's get to another special guest, Molly Jung Fast, all of our friend. Molly Jung Fast.
Molly, what's up?
She's a special correspondent for Vanity Fair. She's also the host of the Fast Politics podcast. So, Molly, I definitely want to know everything you think. I've been thinking about, as we're about to talk to you about all of the things that did not come up tonight. So more anti-trans than anti-Trump. Simone brought up abortion, how that was not a topic. Alicia brought up gun violence. I mean, there was a shooting today. What stuck out to you as things that were kind of like stunningly absent from the debate?
Well, I mean, the biggest one is Trump, right? You have all of these people fighting for second place and they can't touch Trump. I mean, there was a little more of that, but that certainly was. I mean, the thing that was horrific to me and sort of jaw-dropping was when Vivek went on the environment. And he's like, I've never known anyone to be anti-environment. Like, that was an amazing. I mean, that
he's
was
like
amazing.
Super anti-environment. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess he doesn't not just not believe in climate change. He also doesn't believe in that you should even have an environment. I mean, he really, like, what I thought was interesting was as he was losing this debate, and he was booed, I think he was booed 3 or 4 times where the crowd actually booed him. And this was a very friendly crowd who wanted to like crazy stuff. But they could, even he was a bridge too far. But I thought what's interesting was he kept getting booed. And as he got booed, he got crazier and crazier. And so that January, when he said January 6th was an inside job, it was almost like a desperate moment to try to like wrestle back the stage. Yeah. And I thought that was watching someone like decompensate in real time by trying to do all the things that work for Trump, which I think is interesting, was something. And I did think it was interesting. I mean, DeSantis, too, tries to also be Trump without Trump, right? And he keeps going back to these policies as if policies have something to do with Trumpism. So I thought that was interesting, too.
That is, there was this moment, and maybe we can pull this up, and I'm just looking at which number this was. Oh, the dictator moment, which really stuck out to me. The DeSantis response on the dictator comments. And when we pull that and we have that ready, we can watch it. But Molly, were there, you mentioned DeSantis, were there kind of particular moments where DeSantis's desperation came out? That was one to me. But Michael's been talking a bit about these, how these were two desperate candidates and then two other candidates who were maybe, I mean, they were, came across as less desperate.
Well, yeah, they were less desperate. They were more grounded in where they wanted to go in that debate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, DeSantis is so interesting to me because he's just very bad at like retail politics. I mean, I feel like you guys.
Human interaction.
Simone, you must be.
Some might say,
yeah, just be
very
so
awkward.
Glad he's not. Right. It's so awkward. Like, nobody noticed that this guy was so uncomfortable. And, you know, so even I saw it so much with the Newsom debate when he was with Newsom, and Newsom was just like wiping the floor with him. And he kept saying, "You're a liar. You're a liar." And I was like, I don't think this is the effective way to debate someone. And so he does, you know, again, with him, I always wonder, is it like he's so bad or they're so good? But he definitely had moments of that tonight where he just looked like lost.
It was like a it's like a tick at times or something. I'm not sure. But we have that thought. So let's play that and then we can all talk about it.
Look, the media is making a big deal about what he said about some of these comments. I would just remind people that is not how he governed. He didn't even fire Dr. Fauci. He didn't fire Christopher Wray. He didn't clean up the swamp. He said he was going to drain it. He did not drain it. He said he was going to build the wall and have Mexico pay for it. We don't have the wall. He did say in 2016 he'd have the largest deportation program in history. He deported less than Barack Obama did when Barack Obama was president. So some of these policies he ran on in 16, I was cheering him on then, but he didn't deliver it.
I mean,
I want him to be a little dictator in 2016. He didn't do
it. Basically saying Trump is not a dictator enough. I will out dictator him. So, Alicia, I know you flagged this moment as one that stuck out to you. It stuck out to me as well. Give us your take on it.
Well, we're waiting for all of them to say, hey, listen, fellow Republicans, I know you want to go and vote for Donald Trump, but let me lay out for you why that is a bad idea. Let me lay out to you the way in which he has proven to be a threat to democracy and has promised to be a threat to democracy in the coming days. This was in the opposite direction. This was as though what he wanted was more of that. And it reminded me, you know, yeah, Donald Trump wasn't there, but Trumpism was all over the stage in terms of what they were selling to voters, in terms of style, just sort of the meanness, the cruelty, this dark vision of America where everything is scary. There was not a glimmer of hope on that stage where no one said, here's my vision of America. I imagine America to be a land of promise and opportunity. I imagine our democracy to be stronger than ever before. No, there was doom and gloom. And Ron DeSantis saying, I just wish that Donald Trump would have gone harder on his very worst instincts. And so in that way, yeah, Donald Trump, you know, is likely, if you believe the polling, to be their nominee. Even if you're living in another reality where he's not the nominee, any of these folks are still carrying his water to different degrees.
And DeSantis, to your point, Alicia, is like he's been running to the right of Donald Trump in certain areas. I will be more authoritarian. I will be more of a dictator. Mm-hmm. I will take over control more of government. Molly Jongfast, I'm told you have an early morning Joe hit. So
what are you doing here?
I'm told.
I just wanted. But I think you guys are right. And DeSantis continues to run on policy. He thinks somehow Trumpism is about policy when Trumpism was never about policy. Mm-hmm. It was always about personality.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Molly, keep writing. Keep tweeting. Keep fighting.
Girl. We'll love, see you in the morning.
We love you doing all your things. We'll see you very early on Morning Joe.
Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I'm told we have another special guest joining the conversation. Robert Gibbs is with us, my old boss. He's like my favorite boss. You know, don't tell other bosses who are watching on YouTube. Very smart. He's the former White House press secretary for President Obama. Okay, Gibbs, you have prepped a lot of people for debates. You've watched a lot of debates. Give us your unvarnished. What was the craziest moment here and your takeaway on whether this will have any impact in any way? And maybe who's going to be second place? I'll ask that question.
Yeah. I think in terms of the craziest moment, I think just any time Vivek opened his mouth and engaged, particularly, I thought, in just a nasty way with Nikki Haley. I mean, it takes a lot to get booed at your own party, and he did. So I was really struck by that. I thought, Nikki Haley, who gained momentum out of her performance in a number of these debates, just did not have quite the showing that she has had in the past. I think she spent a lot of time probably thinking to herself, are these things I need to respond to? Are these things I need to ignore? Mm-hmm. I think in the end, she started to begin to say, look, I'm just not even going to, asking, do you want to respond? I don't. I thought Christie was much stronger. You could see him assert himself in a way we really haven't seen in some of these debates. The challenge, obviously, for Chris Christie is there's just not a pool of voters in the Republican primary that makes him in danger of being the nominee. DeSantis, continually awkward, but probably had a better night than I think he's had in the past. I don't know if anybody, first of all, I think there's a real challenge as to how many people saw this debate, right? Mm-hmm. We're 40 days from the caucus in Iowa, which is kind of a stunning thing. It's really crept up on us. And the obvious and big winner tonight is the guy who didn't show up, and that's Donald Trump. Nobody's in danger on that stage of taking a big chunk or even a small chunk of his caucus vote in what he did and said tonight. And I think by skipping these debates, he's made a really smart strategic decision not to let these guys take swings at him directly.
Yeah, I mean, the Nikki Haley controlled aspect. I mean, Michael was saying earlier, it's like she was told maybe there's polling. She's also kind of on the upswing. It reminded me, and Gibbs, you'll know what I'm talking about, and others may too. At the White House podium, in the back of the podium, there's a little space for like a cup. Mm-hmm. And Dana Perino wrote in her book about how when the press in there were acting crazy, she would just like flip him the bird and nobody could see. And I was thinking, like, is Nikki Haley just like flipping the bird at all of them?
She's flipping a lot of birds.
Right. And she's just like staying controlled because she knows she needs to be. What I also thought was interesting, and you always raise abortion, Simone. So it didn't really come up. Nikki Haley kind of had this sort of a moment, although I thought she said a whole lot of nothing. Mm-hmm. You thought it was very good at the last debate. And tonight, she repeated twice her pro-life record in her opening, and she really didn't say a lot. But what did you think, Simone, about her?
I thought that it was an intentional avoidance about the issue of abortion tonight because, I mean, the RNC, the candidates on that stage, the voters, they see everything that we see. They've seen the reaction and the response when it comes to abortion and reproductive freedom in this country. They hear from people on the campaign trail that are also Republicans. Republican women don't want to be told what to do with their bodies as much as Democratic women or independent women do either. So I think that it was an admission on the RNC and the debate moderator's part and tacit acceptance and co-signed by the candidates on that stage that no one felt the need to bring up abortion, that no one felt the need to bring up guns.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me. It would have surprised me if they brought it up.
No, that's fair. But it just was a bigger...
Because this is not an issue that's going to move numbers for you in the Republican Party. They're all of one mind on those issues. So why am I going to get on the stage and try to relitigate something that we've already won litigation on? So the reality for... And this is... We're looking at this through a general election lens. These individuals are in a Republican primary that's trying to get 25% of every registered Republican in the country to vote for them, because that's about what the turnout's going to be, right? So that issue, those issues, particularly on the hit, they're not going to talk about the shooting that happened today. There's no way in hell they're bringing that up.
Maybe some of those children that got shot.
But wait, then I need help.
I understand it, but I'm trying to...
Help me understand the entire exchange they had about Nikki Haley wanting people to have to use their actual name as their username. Mm. I mean, I get that it's supposed to be like a big brother government argument, theoretically, but I thought I was lost. And I understand that I am not a Republican primary voter. I had no idea what they were talking about, nor did I have any idea who that was supposed to be appealing to or motivating. It seemed there were a number of times where they got real weedy on things that they almost perceived to be hot button issues, but I quite frankly could not follow.
This is very true. We do have, if we have it, this number 16, which has a bunch of attacks on Nikki Haley. And some of them, to your point, Alicia, were quite obscure, which is kind of interesting. So when we have that, we can play it. Do we have it? Not yet.
Okay. But I can backfill on that. So on the Twitter name, using your real name thing, there have been a number of us, myself included, going back almost 8 years now, 7 years, almost the beginning of Twitter, who believe part of the problem that we see on social media is that when I hide behind a mask.
Oh, people attack.
I can attack you and I don't have to worry about my boss saying anything to me tomorrow morning when I go in. I don't have to worry about my mama coming down in the basement and saying, what the hell are you doing, boy? Right. So there's this movement. It's not a big one. It's a very small one that says, strip that way. You are required now to use your name, your legitimate legal name, at Michael Steele.
Wow.
At Jen Psaki. So that you don't, I mean, then you can say at Michael Steele, cowboy number 207, right? But you've got to use your
own
name. That would not be
it. Can I just say, Robert Gibbs, this is why the Republican Party apparatus is losing young people. Young people love the Finstas. They love a fake Twitter account. The millennials, the Gen Zers, they want to
look at it. I get it, but look at what it has wrought. Look at what it has wrought. So now you've got to try to balance that. And so there are legitimate arguments. It's not a Republican or Democrat, conservative or liberal argument. It's a cross section of people who are thinking about this issue, who are looking at ways in which we can begin to at least stem some of the hate and vitriol and bile that's emerging on these platforms when I get to hide behind a fake name and
So now, Chairman, you have caught me up. I still don't understand who that attacked. Do you have your sound, Jen? You want to play the sound?
Look, I was going to say we can play it, and I totally get this. Now, because Alicia, you're a mom too. What I get about this, and when Nikki Haley talked, was like, yeah, I don't want people to be. Well, I don't like being attacked by anonymous people. Right. I'd rather you be. But anyway, okay. Let's play the Nikki Haley match, just because I think I want to hear from Gibbs on kind of what he thinks this means in terms of what they think Nikki Haley's prowess in the primary is.
You have other candidates up here like Nikki Haley. She caves anytime the left comes after her, anytime the media comes after her. If you're somebody that's going to be the president of the United States and you can't stand up against child abuse, how are you going to be able to stand up for anything?
That. Nikki, you were bankrupt when you left the UN. That math does not add up. It adds up to the fact that you are corrupt. And she should come nowhere near the levers of power, let alone the White House.
I love all the attention, fellas.
I did love the all the attention fellas moment. Okay, but Gibbs, I was thinking watching her, I'm not making a parallel here, but like we both worked for Obama when he was on the rise. I'm not suggesting she's going to beat Trump in the primary, but it always tells you something, right? When everybody's going after one candidate. So what did you take away from that aspect?
Well, I think there's no doubt. I mean, this is three other candidates chasing a balloon that's gaining altitude much, much faster than any of them are. In fact, you know, Vivek has lost lots of momentum. I think Ron DeSantis has too. Clearly, these guys had taken their debate binders and just emptied them tonight. Any attack, all attacks.
Oppo dumped everything.
Just drop all of it. I mean, to Alicia's point, like, even if they didn't understand it or the people at home didn't understand it, they were going to blame it on Nikki Haley. And I thought it was, you know, at the beginning... they asked the electability question, and right off the bat, you know, somebody attacked Nikki Haley. I thought to myself, if you're Nikki Haley, you should say, look, if anybody wants to know about electability on the stage, everybody's attacking me. That's the answer to your question. Look, they realize, again, 40 days, if Ron DeSantis finishes third in Iowa, it's all over, right? And you know, if Nikki Haley
has enough
Nikki
money,
Haley's got to figure out a way to beat Donald Trump in one of these two races, those other competitors know they can't let her do that. And they've got to attack her. I think her strategy was one of just trying to play cool. I think she kind of got a little flummoxed again, trying to figure out what to respond to, what to ignore, probably a little bit off. There's no doubt if you look at any of the polling, you talk to people that have seen it privately, you know, she's on the ascent, and these guys are thinking to themselves, I've got one last really public chance to try to catch her, and I want to start that tonight.
And I'm going to attack her on anonymous Twitter names.
Right.
You know, Robert Gibbs, thank you so much for always giving us lots of wisdom. And next time you will have snacks and caffeine,
yes,
as well Alicia. But we got to, right, these guys have snacks. But we're going to go back to Brian Tyler Cohen because he has more questions and maybe more thoughts. Brian, what have you been thinking about the debate? What have we missed talking about here?
Well, you know, one thing just to build on the usernames aspect of it, which was kind of an obscure topic, was we spoke about, you know, Vivek bringing up provinces in eastern Ukraine. There was also talk of cryptocurrency. There was talk of arming Taiwanese families with AR-15s. There was talk of blocking the Andaman Sea. I mean, either I really don't understand Republican primary-based voters, or these candidates don't understand Republican primary base voters, because I just can't see a world in which these super obscure, really specific topics are what the Republican base wants to talk about. But again, I'm not the audience. So
it kind of dovetails back into a little bit what Alicia was saying before Robert left us. And it's the idea with this base, when they're bringing up these topics, it's not for the substance of the topic.
No,
it's for thank you, Alicia.
Yes.
It's
vibes.
It's vibes. That's vibe. Exactly what it is.
But sometimes the conversations remind me of like somebody, like a freshman hall conversation
when
like somebody's had two classes in Ukrainian history,
right,
and they're like debating it in the hallway drunk at 2 a.m. I mean, that's
a little bit of it.
Sometimes what their comments remind me of. But yeah, it's like the dump of the Oppo research is like the best explanation. And just like they want some obscure Republican voters who are going to turn out in some of these states to be like, I like the guy who said the thing about the provinces.
Beyond that, when you're talking about the name thing, it's about the government intrusion.
Oh, yeah.
It's about the government decision that now you're going to have to disclose who you are publicly because the government said so. That's all that was about. The legitimacy of the point was lost on those who were attacking her. What she was saying, I'm raising my kids, and this is the environment they're in. So she's trying to appeal to rational moms and dads out there, which is why she doubled back and said,
I know,
as a mom.
I was like, oh.
Right, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm like, in defense of Pence. I get on those lines. Chris Christie made that point when talking about the his comments that he had made previously in defense of parents being able to make the choices for their children.
Yes.
And he made the Republican Party voters don't want the government telling you what to do argument.
Right. That's right. What are you going to say, Alicia?
One of the things I was struck by as I was watching this was sort of the art of projection that we've seen from.
Oh, yeah.
From Trump, mostly, but you saw Ramaswamy really doing that, this whole idea where he tried to say that we're marching towards fascism under Biden, under Jack Smith, every last retweet that someone has issued from Donald Trump in the year 2020. And what I wondered about was just sort of the impact that that has on the electorate generally, right? That we can all sit here and say, we can sit here and say, it's a conspiracy theory, plain and clear. There is no actual validity to it. He has no facts to back it up. They're the people that will motivate. They're the base voters, Republican base voters, that will motivate to go out. The people I worry about are people who, you know, are busy. They may not be consuming a ton of news. They are going to tune in and, like, this is going to be what they hear. And in as much as it is a lie, depending on where you get that information from, it might exist to you as a fact. And even if that doesn't motivate you to go vote for a Republican, I think there's always the concern that it just demotivates you at all, that it makes you not interested in the process, makes you not have faith in the process, and not have faith in any of the players.
Alicia, can I just quickly follow up on that? I think it's a good point, but the question I would ask, if I'm a voter who's tuning in at that point, let's say September of next year, and this some of this stuff is kind of being replayed or coming back into play, do you think their reaction is going to be one of, well, oh my God, I can't support that? Or is like, what the hell are they talking about?
Well, I think to Alicia's point, because I've been thinking about this too, Alicia, and it struck me, Trump is doing this purposefully, right?
Right.
When he is saying Biden is anti-democratic. He had signs that were black and white saying Biden is anti-democratic, right? He did Crooked Hillary in 2016. It worked. And the projection, it can be effective.
Right.
And if you see, look in the polls, in the NBC poll, there's only a 2% gap between in the country of the public who thinks Trump is corrupt versus Biden is corrupt.
Right.
So it's like, are they tuning in a year and saying, what the heck? Maybe. But they're also like, everyone's corrupt. Everyone. And that's, I think, the challenge. Okay, Brian, we got to get to some questions before we wrap this up. What questions do we have?
Okay, so here's a question from Luca Kiley. We have, what is it going to take for Biden to get back the support that he's losing right now?
Look, I think
Simone,
it's early.
Just give us the campaign plan.
Look, people, it's early. I called the people the other day.
This is when I start to drink.
I called the people the other day and I asked
There's
them.
Water in there, but
one, I think it's early.
Knock yourself out.
Two, I think the people need not be resting back on their laurels that it's early. So while it's early, you need to work early. And I think that some of this is people saying that they're not going to vote or they don't feel tuned in or they don't like what Joe Biden did. And then, but, you know, come November, they are going to, you know, do the thing. But I think that there is real cause for real concern, which is why I think it is very important that the campaign get on the ground, that they get into the community, that they talk to voters, that they are running an aggressive surrogates program on the ground, that they put people on television to aggressively defend the president. He is out here getting mollywopped around every day, and the people are not defending him. And I think those things will help kind of claw back some support, but you got to give the voters something. The people need to know what they are buying, and the Biden campaign, they have something to sell. They need to go out there and sell it.
More sell, as they say. Brian, what else you got?
All right, so this one, let's go to Alicia for this one. This is from Griff. Which GOP primary candidate is most likely to drop out next, and who do you think they'll endorse?
Ooh. Ooh. Again, more fantasy political football.
That's right.
Stuff.
And this is all on the record. So
I thought it was interesting that, you know, Hutchinson wasn't on the stage tonight. Could have been. Like, I thought that I don't know. It's clearly not Haley, both because there's now, you know, money and wind in her sails. think Chris Christie makes a decision. I think he knows why he's here, so he stays in it. I don't, I mean, tell me if you think I'm wrong, Michael. I don't think DeSantis drops.
Nope.
I think
if he has money, as long as he has money,
as long as they have money,
he's got money.
Yeah. As long as there are resources, I don't know that any of these four drop.
The only way they drop is, and since this was the last debate,
yeah,
they're not. Everyone's going to ride now to at least the caucus. Now, if there were one more debate, the RNC would sort of work the edges so that probably Vivek would not make the cut.
But now they can just like eat peanut butter and jelly and ramen in their basements.
So now they're just doing the thing all the way through. So I think you're right, Alicia. You're not going to see anyone get out at this point because the caucus is in 40 days. And then you've got New Hampshire right after that. And they're just like, let's do it.
We'll just hang in it. Why not? Yeah. All right, Brian, what else you got?
All right. So I think I'm going to try to throw out a question here. I'll ask this to you, Jen, and that is, do you think that anybody on that stage would be a viable candidate for Trump's vice presidential pick? And I have a thought on this, so this is why I'm asking this, is because there are two trains of thought. Like, one, on one hand, there is the Carrie Lakes and the Marjorie Taylor Greens, who are very clearly the Trump loyalists that he needs and that he's kind of promised to surround himself with if he were to win a second term. But at the same time, those people pose a little bit of a risk because they take attention away from somebody whose whole reason for being is to get attention. So do you think that he'll opt for that he would opt for someone of like the Marjorie Taylor Greene, Carrie Lake ilk, or someone like a Nikki Haley who might be more the Mike Pence route to give some voters a permission structure?
Well, as much as Trump is a sycophant, he also is like practical and he wants to win, right? Mm-hmm. So I think my bet is he'd pick somebody who he thinks would help him win. That's my bet. Now, I'm not in Trump's head. I would think on that stage, he's never going to help pick Chris Christie. Ron DeSantis, I guess, if he thinks it helps him win Florida, but he'll win Florida anyway, and he doesn't get him much otherwise. I'm not actually the Nikki Haley case. I'm just not sure if that is like a bet he would make. So I kind of would go the Carrie Lake route, but I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think his choice is on that stage. Yeah. I don't think Donald Trump is going to be looking for anyone who's going to help him this time, because he needed that the first time because he was an outsider looking in. He owns this party, so he doesn't need help.
And the Pence thing.
But in a general election, he doesn't need help. Mike Pence helped him assuage the fears of the evangelicals.
But
and
now
so
they love him.
Tell me what voters going to vote for Trump.
Suburban women.
They vote for Trump if who's on the ticket? Nikki?
Not Nikki Haley. I don't think Nikki Haley helps get some of the suburban women.
Who is that person who gets suburban women for Donald Trump? Who had suburban women without that person?
I think they're unknown. Like how Mike Johnson was unknown until he was the Speaker of the House. I think that his vice presidential pick is someone that we have not given attention to.
Who would you pick if you're advising him?
Probably Elise Stefanik or...
Lord. Yeah. She's gone through a real transition of sorts. Okay.
I'm just saying. Look, there's a practical aspect to Elise that works for Trump on a number of levels. And I just think that someone like that is much more. See, this is not about who helps him. This is about who will do what he tells them to do.
No, that's true. It's a different moment.
I still think that you have to win a general election. And to win a general election, the voters have to vote for you. And they have to want to like who they're going to vote for. So if I'm Donald Trump, I need a lady that they like because I'm a womanizer.
They've already worked the vote. Well, Simone, that's why they got all those election folks out there that no one paid attention to.
Still the election.
Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. We have not found a viable female suburban woman who Trump likes quite yet. Maybe some people out there have an answer for that. Michael, Simone, Alicia, thank you so much. And Brian, of course, our YouTube star. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi,
and
Brian.
Thanks to you at home for watching. We hope you all had as much fun as we did. For now, goodbye from Washington.
Great job, Jen.
Great job.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. single item at regular price.